is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
Wade, it opens wide for Wade. What a dunk! Forty blocked his dunk! Here's Wade to get screen. Euro step. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Vermeil. How you doing, David?
Doing great. Fully recovered after a nice All-Star break and ready to hit the trade deadline running.
Yeah, it's the trade deadline's interesting this year because it seems like all the trades kind of already happened. Like the Rajon Rondo trade, right. A bunch of stuff has already kind of occurred, and now we're kind of hitting the deadline. I don't know. I get the sense that a lot of these rumors that we've been talking about, Brooke Lopez has been on the block forever, Reggie Jackson, one of the Suns point guards. It's the same guys that keep springing up. I don't know. I'm just waiting for some guy to get traded that we didn't even think about. That's what I keep waiting for, or at least hoping for, because I like to see those surprises. But I don't know. I guess because it's not really a deadline as much, or it is a deadline, but not so much as a period. It's just like trades can happen as soon as basically any of the free agents that signed in the summer could start getting traded is when stuff starts happening. So I don't know if we're going to see a trade, but yeah, there's a bunch of rumors that I think we should talk about.
Absolutely.
So I think the main one right now that everybody's talking about is Goran Dragic. God, I cannot get that name down. Or Isaiah Thomas from the Suns. So it looks like Eric Bledsoe's just there. So it looks like one of those point guards is going to be on the move. Adrian Wojnarowski this afternoon wrote a piece about how Dragic only wants to re-sign with the Suns this summer if things kind of go back to the way they were basically before Isaiah Thomas was there, a.k.a. trade Isaiah Thomas. So it looks like the Suns are in a scenario where they have to pick one of them. And everybody, I think, at first thought it was going to be Dragic, but it looks like they'd be willing to part with Isaiah Thomas, who they just acquired from Sacramento as a restricted free agent. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird, because, I mean, I didn't hear Thomas being discussed at all at any point during the season. It was either Dragic because of his impending free agency or nothing. I don't think, you know, the three-point guard set maybe hasn't been as productive as they had hoped, but I didn't think a guy that they had just signed this offseason was going to be moved so quickly. But apparently, in order to placate Dragic, who apparently wants to re-sign with the Suns, and the Suns want to re-sign him, I guess the only way to keep him around is by moving Isaiah Thomas. So that's an interesting deal there.
It's funny because everybody said the same thing, right? When they got Isaiah Thomas, says, oh, that's going to be really loaded. How are they going to share the ball? And everybody's like, well, Phoenix, that's what they do. They share the ball. It'll be fine. And that was kind of the defense of that. But it's exactly what everybody feared, is that, no, you can't. We're in this area of basketball where it's like pace and space, share the ball, move the ball, really play like the best teams play unselfishly. But at some point, players want to be able to do what they can do, right? They want to maximize their abilities. And so ignoring that and just saying, oh, we're an unselfish basketball team, this will work out, you can load one position too much. And I think that's what we're seeing right now from Phoenix. And
absolutely,
three point guards who need the ball to do stuff, that's just a lot, you know?
And none of them particularly dynamic from the perimeter, right? I don't think all of them are great three-point shooters.
Right. I mean, Bledsoe is a top-notch defender, right? And that's probably why he's not involved in any of these things and why he's good just doing really athletic things on both ends of the court. But Dragic and
right.
And then Dragic, and I think the idea was that Dragic was expiring, and he'd probably command more on the open market, therefore the Suns should trade him. But that whole expiring deal right now, it's really put them in a position to where maybe they've been forced to put Isaiah Thomas on the table, because teams don't know if he's going to re-sign. They might not. They flat out don't have the assets to trade for a player the level of Dragic, who's probably a notch above Isaiah Thomas at this point. And so just from what the market is, it looks like Isaiah Thomas might be more available. And the Heat have been involved in some rumors with Isaiah Thomas since the summer when he was a restricted free agent with the Kings. And if they could, and they were, it's pretty openly interested in him, you know? And if they could find a way, and there's that rumor about Isaiah Thomas and Gerald Green for Luol Deng. And I think that's a really good move for both teams. If, of course, the Suns would probably get some draft picks or something compensatory in return. But a trade built around those three parts, I think, makes a lot of sense. What do you think?
Well, I think it does make sense in a perfectly cold-blooded sort of way, because I really, you know, maybe I was just caught up in the moment of the offseason, you know, dealing with the whole departure of LeBron James, and I hate for that to be a continuing theme, but that's the reality, I think, for a lot of the Heat fans and even for us. You know, we were captivated by the moment, you know, Chris Bosh, when he re-signed with the team, that was a huge defining moment for this team. And then Luol Deng immediately made this team, if not quite a contender, maybe a legitimate threat, let's say. Maybe not for a title, but they could be dangerous. And so, and this is also a guy who's pretty, you know, pretty well-respected and well-liked around the league. A decent player, maybe except in the Atlanta Hawks front office. But otherwise, I mean, I don't think anybody's had anything negative to say about a player like that. And so, when he, you know, he's done everything he can, he could do here in Miami. It's been a little inconsistent at times, and he hasn't been quite as productive. But I think that's just the way his whole career has been, more or less. He's still a solid defender. He's tireless as a worker. You can't really expect too much more out of him than what he's been able to produce this year for Miami, given the circumstances and all the injuries and everything else. So I hate to see him go. If that's the only way that we can acquire a caliber, presumably, of Isaiah Thomas's or even Dragic's quality, I'm not sure. What's Gerald Green's contract like? And maybe that'll...
He's expiring. And so, and he's underpaid on the contract he's on now. I think it's about $2 or $3 million. He's a good player, you know? He's very athletic, plays above the rim, could also hit some threes, and plays, you know, plus defense. It's not, you know, between Green and Deng, that's a drop-off, but you're still putting a good player in that position, who's a little bit more athletic than Deng, and maybe could do some things in terms of some perimeter shooting stuff that this team can use. And the problem with the Suns is that even before the season, they were kind of, they had a lot of guys moving in that small forward position, and it looks like Gerald Green was going to be the odd man out because his deal was expiring. And if they can get something in return, right? If you figure that Green's gone after this season, and even Dragic is gone after this season, you want to try to get something in return for those guys. But in a way, trading for Deng, who has a really flexible, you know, smartly made deal, 2 years with the option, for $9 million a year, it's very modest for hit, for that kind of, the kind of player he is. If you can get something in return for Green rather than letting him walk, and then get rid of Thomas, which is in essence keeping locking down Dragic for the long term, you're basically trading two players for two players, because you're basically promising Dragic that he's going to have that position that he wants on the team, and he's going to come back. Because if Waj is right, and I have no reason to doubt that he isn't, that's all. That's if, as long as Thomas is gone, Gorn's back. That just seems like what the deal is. So the Suns are kind of trading for two players, one of them being his own. I think, you know, if you look at what happened in restricted free agency and what Thomas's price was then, you know, you have the market that it is now isn't what it was in the summer, right? You have the depreciation that goes along with it, and the situation that they're in. They're kind of in a corner right now, so it's really not their market to dictate as much as maybe it's at this point they got to take the best offer. If they really, really want Dragic back, they might have to take the best offer they can for Isaiah Thomas.
So it seems to make sense from Phoenix's perspective, but what about from the Heat?
Now it depends. I'm going to separate the question in what do I think about it or what do the Heat think about it. And I think the Heat, if they're really interested in Isaiah Thomas, right, then it's a good trade. And it seems like they were, because they wanted to sign him. or they were at least interested in signing him as a restricted free agent. So if they believe in what his abilities are, then I say they go. Then I think that if the offer's on the table, they go for it, right? Because you're getting a young point guard, a future asset, somebody that could be in the mix. But if they really, if they're really, you know, maybe they didn't, they saw something from Thomas or didn't see something that they don't like in this half a season that he's played with Phoenix. If they really want to just keep that point guard position open for now and keep that 2016 positioning around, then that's something else that they have to weigh. But if they think Thomas is a future all-star, then I think they have to make the deal.
How long is his current contract with Phoenix for?
Well, he just signed there, right? So I would imagine something like 3 or 4 years. Let me look it up.
That's what I thought. And so that kind of puts a cramp on their that cap flexibility, right, which everybody seems to maintain. Obviously, the Heat aren't going to show their cards, but any reporter who covers a team who's had regular dealings with the front office seems to think that this 2016 plan is real. Riley wants to keep that flexibility open.
Right.
So we're talking about a trade rumor, some speculation, but it seems very, very, very unlikely that they'll pull it off.
I think Hassan Whiteside comes into play here, too, because if they figure that they're going to hold on to Whiteside, and if they're going to try to re-sign him, that, in essence, can blow up the 2016 thing in general, because now you're talking about keeping Wade, who's going to be a free agent in 2016, so you want to keep him, right? You want to keep Bosch, who's already signed through, for $20 million a year. If you re-sign Whiteside, that's basically your third star. And if you trade for Thomas now, and you're able to re-sign Hassan Whiteside in the future with his bird rights, which I believe he would have at that point. I'm not sure.
Yep.
Either way. Then that's your team. So if you think that Whiteside's and you're not going to be a major player in 2016. So if Whiteside is blown up, it has kind of derailed this 2016 plan, as there's already been talk of already a little bit, and if he's going to be the guy they re-sign that year anyway, then I say that you make the move now and just keep that core four together and let them grow.
It sounds like a good plan. I agree with you that it's something that they should consider. It just seems contrary to everything that we've heard from the Heat front office and from the reporters that cover them. So I'm not sure that it's a likely to get done deal. And I think it's part of the overall theme as far as the season, the trade deadline, everything else. You have to look at how the Heat front office perceives this season and whether or not they picture themselves as legitimate contenders, or like I said earlier, you know, a legitimate threat. You can make a move that, you know, is maybe during the Big Three era would have made sense, like acquiring a role player, someone who's just going to come in there and supplement a strong superstar-laden team, and might be the final move to get you into that, you know, playoff push or championship push. Or that's something that's not going to work this year. I mean, you need something much better. You need a point guard that's going to be able to contribute, et cetera. I don't even know that a deal gets done at this point, because I just don't think that Miami sees themselves as anything other than a team that's just gone through injuries, and they don't really need to acquire anybody else in order to make any kind of push, because I think if they get healthy, you know, obviously Rick Roberts is out, but if they can get a healthy Wade and he's a legitimate, you know, legitimately healthy for the rest of the season, I think they stand pat.
That's been the issue, right? It's been, okay, as soon as the Heat get healthy, we're going to be fine. And then we get healthy for like a game or two, and then somebody else gets injured, or somebody else catches the flu, or something else happens. And, you know, at some point it's like, well, this is the team that they constructed. Maybe it's time to get a young guy. Maybe it's time to get a guy that doesn't have a million miles on his odometer like Luol Deng does. It might be, if they view getting Isaiah Thomas or anybody, if they view anybody as a, we're going to try to win now, that's the wrong move. But if they can acquire somebody that is a future player on this team that is going to be part of the construction of the team going forward, then I think that's time to, you know, you're willing to risk the 2016 plan. You're willing to put all your chips in that and say, well, let's get the player now instead of 2 years down the road. We can get the best out of Wade that we can, that's left from him, because it's only getting worse from here, right? We can get the best we can get from Bosch that we have from him for these next 2 years and so forth. And we have Whiteside for 2 years. And I think that's really kind of the weighing. 2016, holding on to that empty promise that is that free agency, or let's just make the move now. And even though it sounds like Pat Riley is gung-ho about sticking to 2016, at some point you got to say, well, this is what's on our table, this is what's available, and I get 2 years of more of this Dwayne Wade that I can get, that might be the move to make, especially with the East being as open as it is.
And that seems like a much more legitimate option than the third alternative. You have the 2016 plan. You have the scrap that plan. Let's make a move now.
Isaiah Thomas is on a four-year deal, by the way. $27 million total. Okay.
And then the third option, which I heard, I believe, Zach Lowe and Bill Simmons discussing, which is, will Miami even legitimately tank the rest of the season and try to get back that top 10 protected pick that they have?
Hmm.
That doesn't seem like a very likely option, right? I just don't see Miami. I mean, unless Wade comes back this week and is active and gets hurt almost immediately, I just don't see Miami ever admitting that they're just done for the season. They're not going to make a move. I mean, and that's too bad. You almost wish you could test Wade's health a little bit more before the trade deadline comes around, because you want to be able to see how strong he'll be for the rest of the year. Maybe that was by design. Maybe that's why they rested him as long as they did, just so knowing that, you know, he's going to be healthy after the deadline, knowing that they're not going to make a move anyway. Is that a possibility?
I think the whole idea of tanking is just fully on Dwayne Wade's health, right? If Wade comes back and he gets re-injured or something, I think at that point they just say, you know what? They got to go. Like, this Heat team has to win two of every three games basically going forward to finish with a 500 record. And if Wade gets hurt, without Wade, this team is trash. It's just, unless you're getting 26 points and 20 rebounds from Hassan Whiteside every night, this team is not making the playoffs. And it might not be a matter of deciding whether or not they want to tank or not, or go full 76ers, this is by design. If Wade is just shut down for the rest of the year, they might be bad enough to be a top 10 pick. That might just be the reality of it. I mean, because it's not where they stand now. It's not, once you're out of the playoffs, and they've been out of the playoffs for a day or two at a time, once you're out of the playoffs, it's not that far of a drop to get a top 10 pick. And this team might just be bad enough, and teams like Charlotte and Detroit and guys in Milwaukee, and they might be figuring it out going down the stretch, and even Brooklyn might be figuring it out now, to the point where they finish with better records. All those guys finish with better records than the Heat, and the Heat are right there on the cusp. And it might just be a matter of Wade's health, and they might just be one of the worst 10 teams in the league without Wade.
Definitely a possibility.
And I think if they're right there, I think that if it's a matter of deciding if Wade's going to play through this stuff or if they just want to shut him down, I think that from an organizational standpoint, that pick will be a concern. I don't believe that this team is so blindly competitive that they're just not going to view that. And Pat Riley is smarter than that. This organization has proven that they're smarter than that. If that's what it looks like, and if Wade is just not going to be able to go for the playoffs, there's no point. And I think that would come into play, and they would say, you know what, let's just shut it down. But, you know, this team, they need to figure out if they can make a playoff run, because I think if this team is healthy, this is a threatening 7 seed. And they're not a finals contender, but it's worth it to make the playoffs and make a run and make a push. And maybe even take a first round to 6 or 7 games. It's worth it to not tank.
If somehow you can pull off a trade for a much better point guard that's not necessarily at a level of Isaiah Thomas, where you have to sacrifice Luol Deng's contract. Let's say somehow, miraculously, you're able to acquire, say, Reggie Jackson.
Hmm.
I mean, that's a pretty good starting lineup of Jackson, Wade, Deng, Bosch, and Whiteside with Chalmers and maybe, you know, Birdman, and a couple other players coming off the bench. That seems like a pretty strong team. And again, like you said, maybe not necessarily a championship contender, but certainly capable of knocking out Chicago, maybe even Cleveland in the first round.
You know what?
I don't see why that wouldn't be a possibility.
What are your thoughts on Reggie Jackson? Because I'm not in on this whole Reggie Jackson hype that he's going to be the next point guard. Just in general. I mean, you're watching the Thunder now. Like, what do you think?
He doesn't deserve starter money. I don't think, anyway. He's a good player. He's a little inconsistent at times. Even, you know, Thunder, longtime Thunder fans talk about him, not quite as badly as they do about Chalmers in Miami. But there's good Reggie and bad Reggie. Good Reggie, he's awesome. He shoots. He can get to the rim at will. not a spectacular defender, but not necessarily a bullfighter's defense where he just lets them go right past him. So he just has good nights and bad nights, and I think he's, a little distorted as far as his view of himself. It's a little distorted. I think he thinks of himself very highly, a little too highly.
And this sounds like every point guard the Heat have.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's he's got the upside right now where we know Chalmers, we have good Chalmers and bad Chalmers, and that's where he is. That's it for the rest of his career. Reggie Jackson has the upside where he might be just good Reggie Jackson for the rest of his career. I get that. But I don't know if it's worth whatever that they might have to trade to get Reggie Jackson, considering his market price. I don't know if that's going to be worth it.
Yeah, and it's going to be a rental. I mean, it's a rental for the rest of the year because he's going to expect a lot more money. I mean, maybe he doesn't get it. Who knows how the market plays out next year, this off season. But he wants starter money, and he's maintained that all along. He wants to start, so it works in a way that if again somehow miraculously you can get Reggie Jackson, he's certainly an improvement over Norris Cole, and then you could put Chalmers on the bench and have him thrive as he did at the start of the season, where he was that great six man player where he had a couple of big games. That's not a bad lineup, and so. That's certainly an improvement over what Norris Cole is giving you at this point, which is very little. I mean, even his defense, which is at one point, that was his hallmark, it hasn't been there consistently. He's still foul prone on offense. He still has a tendency that we've always loved where he gets to the rim and doesn't seem to know what to do with it once he's there. So that's...
What would the constructs of Reggie Jackson trade involve if they still are able to maintain that starting lineup?
I'm sorry to run that by me again. I didn't hear that.
If they're able to maintain that starting lineup that you're talking about, like, what are the constructs of a Reggie Jackson trade that is able for Miami to rent Reggie Jackson the rest of the year? Like, what can they possibly give the Thunder where they said, okay, we'll let you have Reggie Jackson the rest of the season?
None. I mean, I think the only thing that they want is probably somebody like Luol Deng, where he provides some good perimeter defense, because they're kind of tired of the whole Jeremy Lamb experiment. They're willing to move Perkins, although they're a little less likely. It would probably be one of two trades where they'd have to acquire Brook Lopez or another cerebral center, because right now Steven Adams is hurt. So they need Perkins because he's providing that veteran leadership. They don't have an adequate center other than Perkins at this point. They could move Serge Ibaka over, slide him from the power forward to the center position, and then maybe have Nick Collison starting. That seems a little less likely.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, Mitch McGarry has provided some good minutes there. He's been, the great white hope in Oklahoma City. But, I mean, that's only been for a few games. I mean, 2 weeks ago he was in the OKC Blue and the D-League, and now all of a sudden he's scoring 20 points. That's great stuff, but it doesn't seem sustainable. He doesn't have the same skill set that a Whiteside does, so he's not the long-term future there. He provides some energy and some hustle, same as he did in college, but he's not going to be a starting caliber power forward at this point.
So basically, the Heat would have to piggyback onto a 3 or 4 team deal where they send something like Norris Cole in their second round pick this year and somehow get Reggie Jackson out of it.
Yeah, that seems much more likely.
Yeah. They could go with Jameer Nelson, who is available from the Nuggets. Now, I don't know what's going on with that. And we haven't heard anything. Like, we've heard asking prices sort of from the Thunder. We've heard, they want a future asset, right, in return for Reggie Jackson. They don't want to give up something and then give up something in the summer. They want something for him that's a long-term asset. And the Suns want first-round picks for Dragic and an all-star in return for those kind of guys. But Jameer Nelson has been rumored to be of interest with a few different teams. The Heat are probably the only team looking at him as a potential starting point guard. And we have no idea what that price is. He's making about $2 million a year. To call him past his prime would be generous, but what would the Heat be willing to give up for that? And more importantly, what are the Nuggets asking for? I don't think we've heard anything. Can the Heat simply just give him a second-round pick and say, are we cool? Or is it going to require a guy like Norris Cole or something like that where they have to get a players involved?
Yeah, I would assume so. Maybe they have a hope that they could sign Cole long-term if he fits.
Right.
The thing is, that's a franchise in disarray at this point. Not only are we talking about Brian Shaw probably not having a very good grip on the team that he currently has, chances are he won't be there next season. Right? I mean, I think his tenure is pretty much done at this point. He's lost the team, even if they trade away everybody. it seems likely that they'll just get rid of their coach because that's what teams do nowadays. It's the kind of league where you can just say, well, let's cut the coach, let's fire him, whatever, and eat the contract loss there. As far as, you know, I can't believe that we're talking about Nelson being viewed as a starter. You think that Miami views him as a starter over Chalmers?
They view Danny Granger as a guy that was going to contribute in the offseason. They viewed Sean Williams. They viewed, like, all these guys that used to be kind of good. I think I wrote this big piece in the beginning of the year. It's like, we got a bunch of guys that used to be kind of good. And that was the offseason plan. So I don't know if they still view Jameer Nelson in that way that, you know, we all know that one of Pat Riley's regrets is not getting Jameer Nelson when he had a chance. And is this time where he finally gets Jameer Nelson? And just, if he's cheap enough, I think he's a starter over Mario Chalmers, only because of the opportunity cost of what you have with Chalmers coming off as a combo guard. Jameer Nelson can't do that. So bringing Nelson off the bench, you're not optimizing the value that you have on your roster. You can, as you would if you had Chalmers and Napier and even Cole, if he's still part of the team at that point, bringing those guys off the bench is a little bit better than bringing Nelson off the bench. Nelson just provides you a veteran, some consistency. You know he's just not going to be very – he's going to be below average probably, or just right there at average pretty much every night. But he's not going to be that old Jameer Nelson that just seemed to have a knack for getting to the rim. I mean, all that stuff's gone, right? But
– yeah, isn't he basically a spot-up shooter at this point in his career?
Yeah, and if he's a spot-up shooter that just knows where to go with the ball, that's an improvement. And just get rid of the spot-up shooter part. If he just knows what to do with the ball, that's an improvement from the current crop of Miami that Miami has at point guard.
I mean, yeah. Isn't that what's missing, though, is that there is no spot-up shooting from our guards other than Chalmers occasionally?
Well, that's what's missing, I think, from Napier, right? That's why he can't seem to stay on the floor at certain times, because he's such a non-factor. And he's still on the learning curve of what's going on offense, where Nelson's past that, right? Nelson knows what's going on. You could plug him in and say, this is what we're trying to do, and I'm confident that he will have a general idea, and it'll click for him faster than any other point guards. Norris Cole, his confidence is gone. It just doesn't seem like he knows what to do with the ball. It's just like, all right, what am I going to do now that's going to get somebody yelling at me? Or what am I going to do now that's going to get me benched? Because that seems to be how he's weighing his decisions, and he just somehow doesn't do anything with it.
When he hits his, you know, when he hits one three-pointer in a big game moment, it reminds me of, like, when I'm playing pickup ball. It's like, yes, I finally got that one shot down. And from there, yes, you know, there's no stopping me. I'm going to put up another five or six and probably miss all of them. But with Norris Cole, he's like, it's that kind of, you're absolutely right in that his confidence is shot. It's that he gets that one shot, and all of a sudden you see him kind of, like, pump his fist. It's like, yes, thank you, God, I made that one shot.
And you hear, like,
because we got expected.
You hear Eric Reed and Tony Florentino talking about him. You know, every time he puts up a shot, you just hear, like, the little bit of hope in their voices. Like, that thing goes in. And every time, you know, we've heard a couple times, oh, that was a big shot for Norris. He needed that. Or, oh, that would have been a big shot for Norris. He needed that one to go in. Too bad. Most of the time, it's the latter. But, you know, that guy, he's done. And if Miami can get anything from him in return, I think at this point is a win. Honestly, like, if you can get a second round pick for him in return, you might consider having to do it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's certainly a legitimate option.
The other idea here is you can move Dwayne Wade to point guard and acquire a shooting guard.
Yeah, I heard that. You know, he hasn't played the point since his rookie year. I don't know. Is that really a legitimate option? Do you think he could?
Yeah.
I mean, he does bring the ball down, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he already plays point when he's in there. He plays point guard for this team anyway. You know,
on offense, on defense, not so much.
On defense, it doesn't matter. You could switch guards off, and the amount, like, if the Heat are just going to keep switching guys on the perimeter anyway, as they've been doing with Whiteside in the middle, they just kind of switch guys around and then just filter everybody to the middle. It doesn't really matter, I guess. But on offense, if he's just the guy that's bringing the ball up, and you can just find a spot up shooter and somebody that's just decent enough on defense, that's a win. And the only problem, really, with that is not X's and O's, but it's, can Wade stay healthy enough to where you can rely on him to be the point guard for the rest of the year? If you're making a move and you make that move for a shooting guard that you don't want playing point guard, and then Wade gets hurt, now all of a sudden you're asking, and it could still work because you're asking Chalmers, he doesn't have to be a point guard and a shooting guard, just focus on being a point guard. And the same goes for everybody, and then you might have an opportunity to eliminate those dreadful two point guard lineups where Norris Cole and Chalmers find their way on the court at the same time somehow. If you can eliminate that, that's a win. And just playing a combination of new shooting guard and Tyler Johnson or new shooting guard and James Ennis on the floor is better than that. In mind, Aaron Flalo, but it looks like his price is going to be too steep. But really, nobody is really being rumored. Gary Neal, if he's available, we could bring him back into the mix. It's tough. I mean, do you go after Crawford from China? Do you go after Nate Robinson, who's still available? There's really not much going on. Shooting guard's the hardest position to find, I think, in the NBA. And I think at this point, you can't really go to the D League either. It's a little too far into the season for that. So there's really just not many options for Miami, and that's why, I mean, I have it written down here. Andre Blatch, if you're looking for front court. Larry Sanders could get bought out. Is that an option? Michael Beasley. The Heat were interested in Brooke Lopez. I mean, these are all guys that are available potentially, but, you know, Miami's biggest position of need right now is guard. And if they don't, if they're looking to make a deal, it's got to be for something in that backcourt. Because we've seen great games from Whiteside and Bosch that Miami still loses, because that backcourt's that bad.
Would you say that the only three players on Miami's roster that are untouchable at this point are Chris Bosh, Hassan Whiteside, and Dwayne Wade?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I think if Mick Roberts is an interesting asset to a team that looks like they can, that if a team thinks that they can make the playoffs next year and might be willing to let a current asset go to make a run next year, Mick Roberts is a really interesting piece. And I think Chris Anderson has a lot of value to a team that's right there. I think Chris Anderson in Portland makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Chris Anderson in Houston makes a ton of sense. I think that would be a really good fit. I think if Houston can involve, if the Heat and the Rockets can create a trade built on Chris Anderson and a guy like Clint Capella, who we know that the Heat would probably have drafted if they weren't going to get Shabazz Napier. They liked him. So they can have an opportunity to go get Capella and maybe a backup guard like an Isaiah Cannon type. If you can get those two guys for Chris Anderson, that might be, you might have to do that.
It's an interesting move. I don't know Capella. What was he like?
He's just a big guy with, you know, he's really athletic. Kind of Hassan Whiteside-y. He's just a big guy with promise. That's basically it. Not getting any time really with Houston. But they have a lot of, they have like Joey Dorsey there. They got Dwight, obviously. They got, you know, some, they have some depth there. But they could certainly use a bona fide rim protector like Chris Anderson. And if the Heat can get even a couple of assets back, just young guys that can bolster the depth on this team, get a guy that you liked in the draft and get a guard who can shoot. Isaiah Cannon can shoot, if we remember from the playoffs last year. I mean, to talk about him as a potential starter is scary, but it's realistic. So, yeah, right. So, and then, what do you think about Larry Sanders? There's been some murmuring on Heat Twitter about Larry Sanders in a Miami uniform. I know what I think, and I think we're probably on the same page here.
It's a tricky one. I like it.
Really?
I like the possibility. Yeah. Do you not like the possibility?
No.
Really?
And I'm a huge Larry Sanders fan. I'm all about holding out hope. I still think Michael Beasley could be a good player in this league. I am all about holding out hope. And I am completely on the Larry Sanders bandwagon. I think he'd be good. I just don't know if you want that, all the baggage he brings. This team is already dealing, quote-unquote, with Hassan Whiteside, right? I don't know if you could bring the player in at the same position, no less, where now you have to ask this really strong locker room to say, okay, now we have two centers who are kind of have their share of baggage. You fix both of them. And then you're dealing with a Chris Anderson, who would probably be on the roster at that point. You have him. You have Donis Haslem, who would be out of the rotation at that point. I don't know. I don't like the dynamic. I think if you didn't have Hassan Whiteside, I'm all for it. But since you have Whiteside, I don't think there's room for another.
See, I think, maybe I'm wrong because I haven't exactly followed Larry Sanders' career all that closely in Milwaukee, but his baggage, if you will, is different than Whiteside's baggage. It's not the same kind of overconfident arrogance that has been marking his career. I mean, it's maybe somewhat flakiness, certainly a history of some drug use, whatever.
But on both levels, it's immaturity. And I don't think that this Heat team has very much patience for that.
Oh, I see. I disagree, though. I think that they're willing, if they find work ethic there, and I think that would have been the problem with, like, say, Michael Beasley. Like, look, you knew the kid was immature. I mean, his favorite character was SpongeBob SquarePants, and he was 20-something years old. You know, not that there's anything wrong with it. I still watch Adventure Time all the time. But anyway, the point is, you know, I think he was immature, and as talented as he was like this incredible natural talent.
We're talking about Beasley now.
I'm sorry?
Are we talking about Beasley?
Yeah. As incredible as his talent was, the work ethic wasn't always there, and particularly on the defensive end. Now, that's where Larry Sanders thrives, does he not? I mean, he's a shot blocker extraordinaire. He's a pretty decent rebounder.
But then he had that quote earlier about maybe not wanting to play basketball anymore, like, I don't know. Those quotes are always taken out of context in some case, but those words were reportedly said, and I don't know. I don't know if he has a work ethic, and if he does, and if he doesn't, I think you're right. I think work ethic is probably more on base with what the Heat don't have patience for, and it looks like Whiteside had it at least this go around, and he's willing to put the work in. And if Sanders shows that he has it, then okay. But I still don't know how he fits in unless you trade Birdman. If you trade Chris Anderson, then I think definitely just go young at the position and see what you can get, see what sticks.
Right.
I'd rather have Larry Sanders than Andre Blatch, that's for sure.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's another case of that, you know, gifted offensive player, doesn't care about defense. That's not going to jive in Miami.
And I think of all these guys, if Sanders hits the open market and Pat Riley is able to pitch the family atmosphere to him, the living in Miami thing to a young guy.
Yeah.
I think that's a realistic thing, especially since Sanders is used to, you know, being on developing squads and having the idea of him playing a prominent role and even just pairing with Whiteside, that could be dangerous. That could be freaking monstrous as a front court. And
Am I flipping you on this then? Because I mean, you seem pretty determined not to have him on board, but now all of a sudden you're coming over to the dark side.
I'm only on board if they trade Chris Anderson.
Well, I think that's a foregone conclusion.
Okay.
Yeah, otherwise, there's a logjam there, and it's unnecessary.
Okay. Because I think a lot of the stuff I've been reading on Twitter, it's not really mentioning that. Again, it's only 140 characters a tweet, but I really do think that they should trade Chris Anderson too. I like Chris Anderson, but he's gonna take a step down. I flip-flop on this all the time. And I think we've talked about this on the podcast, but just from a logical standpoint, there's going to be another decline next year. And we see a decline every year with Chris Anderson. That's the point of, you know, he's old in basketball years. That's it. So if you're giving that another decline next year, knowing that you're not going to win the NBA Finals this year, if you could sell high on him and get some future assets in return to a team that needs a guy like Chris Anderson, and there's a lot of teams that need Chris Anderson this year, the Clippers, Portland, Houston, Golden State even, Dallas could use him. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could use 15 minutes of Chris Anderson a game in the playoffs. Chris Anderson's the kind of player that could shift he could change the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
We saw it.
He's looked spectacular since Whiteside's been emerging as a starter. I mean, he's given some nice energy off the bench, and I think that could really be a boost for any playoff team.
And I love the combination of him and Chris Anderson. I think it works really well. Anderson's unselfish enough. He's at the point of his career where he's saying, I'll play 15, but if you need me for 22, I'll give you 22. You know, if Whiteside gets in foul trouble, it's a great combination. But realistically, if you can get more in return for Anderson than what he's worth in a vacuum, I think you have to do it. And I think there might be an opportunity on the market the way it is, with the playoffs about to be as competitive as they are, for a team to be willing to overpay a little bit for 15 minutes of Birdman a game.
You've seen Portland a lot. Do they have any assets that they could trade for Birdman?
Sure. I think a guy like CJ McCollum. I think, you know, you got a young point guard there. There's I don't think they would trade Steve Blake, but guys like that, Thomas Robinson, Nicholas Batum, if they decide to make him available, if you could package a thing. I think the best trade for Portland would be a thing with Chris Anderson and Luol Deng. Now, I don't know how what kind of salaries you need to include to match those up, but if you can put Deng and Anderson in a deal and get a guy like Batum back and maybe CJ McCollum or a young guard of some kind, that might be worth it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was hoping you'd say Batum because he's struggled with injury this year, but there's still promise there. I mean, he had a really good season last year.
He's a good shooter, but he just can't stay healthy. And, shooters, if they're not healthy, it takes their jump shot off a tick or something like that, and it can ruin an entire season for them shooting-wise. And if you can get Batum back, let him get healthy, he can look a lot better next year. I mean, we saw that with Jared Dudley, right? Yeah. Like, he was sold for nothing. Literally nothing. The Clippers gave him away to Milwaukee, and now he's thriving in Milwaukee as a great shooter and a team leader. I think Batum could be something like that too. And if he's low and Anderson and Deng are high, and you can make that switch, that's a win.
Absolutely.
So I think there's some moves here, but everything we're talking about is kind of involving Riley and the Heat saying, like, conceding the point that they're not gonna even. Even if they make the playoffs, it's not going to be much of a run. You know, because those trades that we just talked about, you can make the playoffs with those players, but without Anderson and Deng or those kind of guys, you're not going to make much of a run. But if you can get a future asset in return, and maybe you are eliminated from the playoffs two or three games before you thought you were going to be, like, really, what's the difference?
Yeah, the timing of this trade deadline seems to have thrown the Heat's front office schedule a little back because, you know, you were hoping, I guess, that Dwayne Wade would be healthier and he wouldn't be in the position you are now in a number of games. I mean, you're still in the playoff hunt, but you're still a number of games under 500. You're not quite sure if Wade's going to be healthy. It's tough, right? I mean, it's a defining point in the season.
It is, and it's the whole Dwayne Wade injury thing. That's the wrench, right? It determines everything. The Heat, like, they can go from a team that can potentially eliminate somebody, you know, at the height of their powers. They can eliminate somebody in the playoffs to a team that can bottom out and end up getting their top 10 pick without really wanting to. It's not ideal, and it's kind of how this whole season has been. It's been, okay, if it's healthy, and we really have no idea what to expect at all.
So we're going on a record and make a prediction for how the deadline will shape up and how the second half of the season up to.
No, I don't want to do that. Do you have a prediction? Are you feeling confident about anything?
I don't think they make a move.
Okay, I think they make a move.
There you go.
I do. I think they do. I think they. I think Norris Cole or Chris Anderson is moved.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they keep Anderson because he's been working. I hate to contradict you, but he's been working well backing up Whiteside and Norris.
No, you're not contradicting me. You're absolutely right when you say all that. I think it gets moved.
And Norris Cole's value is at an all-time low, so mm-hmm. You're looking at, you're not going to get anything back unless you include some other player. And again, I think they see themselves as being a playoff contender, and who knows what could happen at that point. I guess they're banking on Bosch and Wade and Whiteside being able to be a very dangerous player in the postseason. They've got that experience factor. It's the Eastern Conference, and not everybody's going to be 100%. You know, we've already had our injury issues. Let's just say Timofey Mozgov doesn't get hurt in the next month or so, and he's out for the rest of the season, and all of a sudden Cleveland reverts to the team that they were a few months ago. You know, not a solid defending team at all. It could happen.
I think this team is like this team, the core four of Deng, Wade, Whiteside, and Bosch, 7 games, 44 minutes total. I mean, that's it. This team could be really good. Well, not really good, but this team could be a real threat. This team could eliminate people in the playoffs. But what about the idea of trading Norris Cole for next to nothing if they see somebody in free agency that they want? Because this team is capped out on its roster spots. Looks like they're committed to Tyler Johnson, at least for the balance of the season. I don't know what the deal with Justin Hamilton is. I guess you can waive him. But if you could trade Norris Cole for a second-round pick from 2017 or something, and you know that you can get a guy in free agency, maybe even something like that.
I think it's worth it.
I think if that guy is worth it, you know, if they decide to sign Blatch or Crawford or even Beasley or something,
right.
Somebody that can contribute.
And I think it's going to be an overarching theme over the rest of the year or the rest of the. I mean, as far as the foreseeable future for the NBA, that I don't think a first round pick has the same kind of value that it used to. I mean, it's such a gamble, and with the number of players being developed through the D League that are going to be legitimate contenders or legitimate players and contributors, maybe a guy that's drafted early, especially with the whole one and done system in college, you don't know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could get a guy. I mean, look at the number of players coming up for the D League that are really solid contributing players. I mean, Whiteside's a great example, but I think you have the legitimate farm system there, and all of a sudden a first round pick doesn't have the same value as an asset that it once did.
I think some teams value first rounders too much, and some teams don't care about them at all. I think
certainly the latter.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. They're like first round pick whatever, but some teams like the 76ers for example, they'll trade whatever you want. You got a first round pick that's going to be in the lottery, we'll take it. Just pick whatever you want, we'll give it to you. Because some teams just view it as just a pure analytics, quote unquote. Love you, Charles Barkley. Analytics point of view, it's well, I have X number of picks, I have X amount of chances to hit the next Kevin Durant, you know? And there's some teams that view it like that. So luckily for the Heat, they don't have any first round picks, so they don't have to deal with that. But yeah, I don't know. It's a team like the Suns seem to value a first round pick, right?
Yeah, it's worked for them. And I don't know that the Suns are necessarily a strong free agent location. Like, I don't think
they've never really been, players. Have they?
No, they haven't.
Yeah. And I get maybe that's the difference. Maybe a team like Miami where they can get free agents, New York. The teams that are always trading away their first-round picks, the Lakers, they're like, well, we don't need them.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we'll get them after they've been seasoned a few years, after 3 or 4 years, and they're done with their rookie contract. We'll get them then.
It's worked so far in Miami. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe even if it's like a move like Alonzo Mourning, where you trade for a disgruntled player still in his prime. I mean, why wouldn't he resign here if you have the cap space and it's Miami? You could be the focal point of the offense. I mean, you could be the building block for the future. So it does work.
Yeah, and the Thunder's way of doing things is kind of in vogue. Of let's just try to draft everybody, and oh my gosh, we got 3 of the top 10 players in the NBA. That's great. That never is going to happen, probably ever again. But, you know, I think there's a middle ground, right? And that middle ground is something like what I guess Houston is doing, where you're willing to sign or trade for big names, but you're also trying to get assets and keep picks so that you can draft and develop talent for the depth, right? And that's where I think Miami went wrong. And if you ask them again to do a do-over, they don't trade that first-round pick to lock in for the possibility of more years on LeBron's contract. They're keeping that pick. So, you know, there's an in-between balance there. You want to keep enough picks to where you want to get those all-stars, because without an all-star, you can't do anything. But you want to have enough picks where you can consistently reload and retool and just kind of add more blood to the body. You know, give more oil to the machine, so to speak. And if you don't have any picks, you're really, it's hard to do that.
Well, LeBron really fucked up everything, didn't he?
Yep, that's the moral of the story. That's why we're not going to get a Flalo or Dragic or Isaiah Thomas. That's all his fault. All right. Well, we don't play again until Thursday.
That's correct.
Play Knicks. So, and then we play again this weekend. Who do we play? Forget. I've been so out of basketball for so long.
Yeah, a little. I mean, we got to get back, you know, back into writing shape here.
Yeah, right. It's like real writing instead of all the rumors and stuff that we post. Just try to get people to click on them. Jameer Nelson gonna sign with the Heat, and then you click on it. Nope.
That's a good move. That is a good move. Yeah, I'm trying to check out the schedule here. I don't know exactly who they play next.
Oh, the Pelicans on Saturday.
Oh, that's big.
Anthony Davis versus Hassan Whiteside. Hopefully Anthony Davis plays versus Hassan Whiteside.
Right, I thought he was still out, though.
We'll see.
Is he likely? Yeah, okay.
Probably still out, but, you know, we got a little bit of time here. It's only Tuesday or something. Still not sure what it is, that crazy President's Day weekend. Not sure what day it is. Friday and Saturday. Yeah. I don't know. I'm so over trying to predict what's going on now. Did the Knicks shut down Carmelo Anthony? Have we heard about that? I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was...
they have shut him down.
He played the All-Star game, and then they shut him down.
Okay, so we beat the Knicks, and then we lose to the Pelicans. That's the easy way to go about it. Unless Anthony Davis is not playing.
Right, and we're at home against the Pelicans.
That doesn't matter. We're better off on the road.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What's your prediction? Do you want to put it on the line? Two predictions in one podcast?
How far are we going here? I guess we, you know, we Monday's game is against the 76ers. I want to say we win the next three games. I think Dwayne Wade revitalizes us. He comes back against the Pelicans at home. He feels it in front of the Miami Heat crowd. Assuming, and this has been a big thing all season, but assuming we're healthy, Whiteside's there and the lineup, you get that pick and roll going. I mean, the Knicks, I could be wrong, the Knicks could be a blowout. You rest those guys by the fourth quarter. You have a back-to-back at home against New Orleans. Everybody's
the Knicks are really bad.
Right. They will be, especially. I mean, they were. We beat them pretty handily.
Yeah. 3-0 is not bad. I like 3-0.
Absolutely.
I'd take it. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, David. This was the Heat Check. Check us out online at allyoucanheat.com. Follow us on SoundCloud. Subscribe on iTunes and rate us and review us and say really nice things about us because we put a lot of work into this. And we're guaranteeing you 3-0 for the next three games. It's the least you could do.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for joining me, David.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.